Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, listening audience, and welcome to The Conscious Capitalist. I'm your host, King, and looking forward to another great show to all our Conscious Capitalist members out there listening. Hope that everyone is living in higher purpose and focus on how to provide value for all your stakeholders. So today we have an excellent show for you today. We have a gentleman who is also a Conscious Capitalist, and he's affiliated with New York Rochester chapter. His name is Andrew Brady. He's a president and chief evolutionary officer of the XLR18. Andrew, unique ability is he's a genuine local critical thinker with a desire to make an impact, determined to get results through collaboration and leadership charisma. His passions are seeking the exhilaration of adventure and uncertainty, engaging with those that I love, investing in mind, body, sharing and connecting courageously, impacting the growth of others. Andrew also specializes in working as a management consultant. Andrew was accepted with the management training program at Wegmans Food Markets and helped prepare a 40-employee department for the largest store opening in the company's history. 2 years into his role, Andrew and his father spoke of his father's impending retirement, promoting Andrew to move back to Rochester to learn the business he had always dreamed of leading. As a director of business development, he was responsible for broadening the client base for the XLR18 and has delivered leadership training and coaching at Wegmans Food Markets, the Rochester City School District, Klein Steel, Clean Craft, Bergman's Associates, and Dig U Brand Development. Andrew's role also tasked him with diversifying the revenue stream. Toward that end, he led a project to create a mobile app to support XLR8's evolutionary leadership and cultural transformation processes, and is currently working on an online course to scale the leadership development process that has been delivered as an in-person program to over 500 executive leaders over the past 20 years, including 250 at Wegmans. Andrew has also demonstrated a passion for involvement in the Rochester community by co-chairing Rochester's Rotary's Business to Business Committee and mentoring a young man through Big Brothers, Big Sisters. He also volunteers his time to teach leadership at the RIT Leadership Institute, the RIT Center for Urban Entrepreneurship, and to city school students through Junior Achievement. He serves on the boards of the Rochester Chamber of Conscious Capitalism to cultivate purposeful, values-driven organizations. Rochester Young Professionals as the Professional Development Co-Chair to help build Rochester's future leaders, Friends of Educational Excellence to get students in the city school district to grab grade-level reading, and for Next Gen Rochester, a philanthropic giving circle for young professionals. I'm excited to bring to the table, to Conscious Capitalist Show, Mr. Andrew Brady. Andrew, welcome to the Conscious Capitalist Show.
Thanks so much, King. I'm excited to be here. It's great always to connect with fellow Conscious Capitalists and to be able to build a network all around the country and all around the world.
Absolutely. You know, as I was reading your bio, I realized that you were involved in a lot of things at a very early age, very impressive leadership type activities. And I will begin. My first question is by asking you, so what has inspired you to just get involved in these different activities at your, at what some folks will look at as an early age, but as a conscious leader, you know, you never really, it's never really too early, but I'm just interested to see where, what inspired you to really just get out there and be a conscious leader, be involved in the community and be the leader that you've been.
Oh, wow. Well, a lot of it has to be, you know, in gratitude to my father. So actually he was 41 years old and, had a successful career in business and came home one day to tell my mom that he had decided to leave his job. And that it was very much a spur of the moment decision. He had actually been in a performance evaluation with his boss. He was the number two guy at a hospital, and the president of the hospital brought him in and said, "You know what, Tom? I you know, you're doing all right, but I can tell you've lost a little bit of your passion. What's going on?" And he said, "You know what, Tim? I just don't want to work here anymore." And I don't know how he could possibly explain that to my mom, but the way that he explained it to me as a 7-year-old, translated to a 7-year-old term, was there were certain things I liked about my job, and there were certain things that I didn't, and I just want to do more of the things that I liked. And, of course, to a 7-year-old, that makes all the sense in the world. And I don't think at the time, certainly, I realized how much that ended up really coloring my whole worldview. You know, not only that work should be a source of meaning and fulfillment and fun, but that you should be willing to take a big risk, like leaving your job he had two of my older sisters were in high school getting ready to go to college. I was 7 at the time. And so there's a lot depending on him. And I remember kind of the follow-up conversation was that he sat down with my mom and basically they explained to me how, you know, we might have to take it easy on the next couple of birthdays and Christmases and those sorts of things. But, you know, to be honest, those Christmases of austerity never materialized because, you know, it was really a testament to how he had lived his purpose. And when you have a clarity of purpose in your job and in your life, how much that can really bring, you know, success to yourself and really how you can bring other people along with you. And so when I was at a very young age, I always wanted to soak up everything that I could from my dad and all the things that he was always teaching. I was trying to learn around the dinner table and taking leadership assessments from a very young age. So from really that time when I was 7, taking leadership assessments, always wanting to be in leadership roles and in the community. I remember that I joined Boy Scouts as a kid and with an express purpose of wanting to become an Eagle Scout, you know, for the leadership opportunities, and always wanted to be the captain of whatever teams I was on. And so it was really a evolution, and as I got older, you mentioned at the beginning in the introduction what my unique abilities and my passions, and that's all part of what we call the.
Hello, Andrew. Andrew, we seem to have lost your connection. You actually, your phone went silent. Are you still there? Well, we might be experiencing some technical difficulties with Andrew. While we get those resolved, I just want to share some other interesting information with Andrew until he gets back on the line. Exactly who this gentleman is and why it's important that this show, you listen to him and what he brings to the table. I believe that what he's done and what he's continuing to work on is something that's very impressive. And as we know, we need strong millennial leadership, or leadership within the millennials, I should say, to help guide us into the future. Let me see if Andrew is back on the line now. Hello, Andrew.
Can you hear me now?
Hello? Yes, yes, I can. Yes.
All right. Sorry about that. I could hear you, but you evidently couldn't hear me.
No problem. No problem. We got it worked out. I'm sorry. You were, I think you got dropped right around the time a little bit after you talked about your father's choice to leave his company, and you were 7 years old, and how right where you say Christmas, even though he said you have to be a little tight, they wasn't, and that's when the phone dropped at that point.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, so you know he because he was so clear on his purpose, you know, he had been for many years at the hospital working on developing the future leaders of the company, and they just didn't seem to value it as much as he did. And so that's really what he wanted to do, was to help leaders create companies where everyone is thriving, where everyone is connected with their purpose. And at the time, you know, back around, this was 96, it was a little bit more of a, wasn't as mainstream as it's starting to go today, thanks to conscious capitalism and B Corps and benefit corporations and all these related purpose-driven business movements. At the time, it was a little bit more radical, a little bit more leading edge, and so that hospital wasn't ready to take it on. And once he got clear on his purpose and he started to build a company around his purpose, he was actually able to be pretty successful right from the get-go. It caught on. He was able to bring people with him. And so really, you know, I was always trying to take on leadership roles and learn from him. I learned about leadership just sitting around the dinner table and always wanted to get involved. And you read off my unique ability and my passions, and that's all part of what we call inner compass. It's a really purpose discovery process that we take all our clients through. And I was lucky enough, you know, at a young age, it was actually in between my junior and senior year of college that I went through our entire Accelerate Leadership Development process as a student, and was able to go and really clarify my own inner compass. And as I did that and got clear on my purpose, it became clear to me that I wanted to follow in his footsteps. You know, he was always very careful to not push me into taking over the family business, but I really had developed a passion for it, and I thought that it was aligned with my purpose. And so that was part of it. You know, when I moved back to Rochester, was really wanting to get involved in the community and wanting to help other young people get involved in the community and find their own niche, find their own purpose, find their own passions, and how they wanted to impact the community. Because there's a lot of revitalization going on in Rochester right now. It's an exciting time to be here.
Well, you know, thank you for that, because as I was listening to you, I was thinking about how much we have in common as conscious capitalists, conscious leaders. And I hear the passion in your voice and definitely the respect that you and admiration that you have for your father. But you mentioned your purpose several times as far as living your purpose. But would you please share with our listening audience exactly what is, or what do you see as your purpose in life?
Yeah, so I like to say I kind of have a short version and a long version, but the first piece of it is to cultivate fascination, to really be present in the moment, and to try to really, I believe that every moment and every person that I meet, there's something to be learned, and if I'm not fully present and fully mindful in that moment, then I'm not learning. And after the cultivating fascination, it's a matter of seeking collective wisdom. I I'm an avid learner. I read books to no end, and love to learn from fellow conscious capitalists. I love to learn from all different kinds of people. And so to be a continuous learner, and then the last piece of it is navigating our adventure. Because when we can create alignment between the purpose that we aspire to, and then we can try to actually bring that into our lives, it's an adventure. There's ups and downs, and as a coach and a leadership development consultant, that's a lot of what we're doing is helping to turn that purpose that a company or an individual is espousing, and how to really make that a living, breathing part of the organization. You know, so often companies create their values and their mission statement, and they know that leaders today know that they at least should have that, But then once they create it and they put that fancy plaque up on the wall, they think they're all done. And obviously you and I both know that that's just the beginning, because that's the hard part, is once it's printed in plaque, that's when you got to really start living up to it. Otherwise, when your employees walk by the plaque, they're going to laugh cynically at, you know, how different their everyday experience is. So really my purpose, I feel, is to help leaders create those kind of companies where the purpose is aligned with their people and their culture, and all their stakeholders are able to thrive, whether it's their employees, their customers, the planet, the community, you know, all those stakeholders that we talk so much about in conscious capitalism. And really when those stakeholders' interests are all aligned and all taken care of by the company, it increases the success of the company, the resilience of the company, and the well-being of all the individuals that are involved as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, to your point, you know, I found for me that once you discover your purpose in life, everything changes. Your outlook on life changes, how you move through life changes, how you deal with individuals who you choose to deal with changes. Your environment changes intentionally because you want to be around with other purpose-driven individuals. You want to connect and talk to other individuals who are driven by their purpose and people who are living purposeful living lives. And so for me, that is one of the most, I think, instrumental and critical things to finding fulfillment in life, is discovering that purpose, which is not easy, but I think that it's, once you do tap into it, it changes everything about how you look at life, and in essence changes your life as well. It transforms you.
Absolutely. Yeah, you hit it right on the head. I think it's certainly not easy to find, and I think that it's a continual process of discovery and refinement and you know, additional clarity. But it's also so important that you mentioned the environment that you create. You know, the quotes about how you're the average of five people you spend the most time with, and you know, the power that a culture has on your well-being and in the well-being of the company. You know, those kinds of things, they can become almost invisible. You know, the people that you're around or the culture that you're in can become almost invisible, but it's so powerful. And so it's really important to be mindful of who you're surrounding yourself and what you're surrounding yourself with, because it has a huge impact on where you're going and whether you're pushing yourself to continue to grow and whether you're becoming more of a conscious capitalist and becoming more of a purpose-driven leader.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, as a millennial, what do you find most appealing about conscious capitalism?
You know, I think I go back and forth on this. You know, there are certain things about the millennials that present this interesting new way of doing business and trying to keep those millennial employees engaged. You know, the millennials certainly want to have more purpose in their lives. They're not content to just be, you know, working and doing menial tasks and menial labor, and sometimes that gets conflated in terms of being entitled. But I don't think that, you know, to expect someone to spend a few decades doing work that they're not passionate about in hopes that they'll climb up the ladder to a point that they can do work that they're passionate about, I think that that's really, you know, not only does it leave a whole lot of potential and energy and excitement and engagement on the table for those companies, but, you know, no, I don't believe that you should have to sacrifice your well-being, you know, for so long. It's not to say that they're not willing to work hard, but at least to be able to show them what it is about their job that is contributing to the company, that's contributing to the world, trying to engage them in how they fit into that company's overall purpose and mission, and how their purpose and mission is aligned with the company. So there's you know, a certain element of the millennials wanting to have that purpose. But then I think, you know, sometimes it's just a matter of being that next generation, right? Whether or not it's specific to millennials, I think that a lot of people that are, you know, in their 20s and 30s, they're searching for that purpose. Maybe they haven't found it yet. And it becomes something that sometimes can be, you know, an added stress. There's, you know, if you're searching and you feel like you should find it and you can't find what your purpose is, that can be a scary proposition, you know, that you're wanting to have an impact and you can't figure out how you should be in the world. And so I think that creating ways for millennials to do that, whether it's through their work or through school, but there is, at least, especially with conscious capitalism and related movements and, you know, just social entrepreneurship in general, there is now more of it's more accepted now and it's more expected now that there should be purpose from business and from work, and that it shouldn't be that you go turn your brain off and turn your heart off and, you know, just go use your hands or just go do whatever task you're meant to do at the computer. But really that you're engaged and that you're finding purpose in your work. And so the more that companies can tap into that and not only help the people in their company to find their purpose, but help to show them how the company's purpose and the individual purpose are aligned, the more they'll be able to tap into that workforce. And the more that they'll really, you know, it's a win-win, as we always search for in conscious capitalism. It's a win for the employees. They're going to be happier and more engaged, and their well-being is going to increase, and it's more than likely going to help the bottom line of the company as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, what are your core values that you see for yourself and you set for yourself as a conscious leader?
Yeah, so I have a longer list of five, but the two that always come out on top are growth and love. And so what I see kind of, especially in my kind of in alignment with my purpose, is I'm always growing. I think that conscious capitalists and conscious leaders are always growing. You know, John Mackey talks about how the leaders have to grow in order for the organization to be able to grow. You know, if you're not continuing to grow yourself and to grow and evolve your own consciousness, that's why, you, as you mentioned in my bio, I'm the chief evolutionary officer, because we have our evolutionary leadership process is what we kind of term our leadership process. And so it's a continuous evolution of your consciousness. It's a continuous evolution of, you know, who you are. You know, I'd like to think that when we, 20 years from now, read the original Conscious Capitalism and Firms of Endearment book, that companies that have those kind of conscious practices, or what today we deem conscious practices, will be mainstream. And that, you know, the companies of tomorrow that are setting themselves apart with consciousness are going to be even beyond that. And so I think that it becomes, rather than, you know, people talk about a race to the bottom sometimes, I think it's a race to the top in terms of consciousness and conscious capitalism, where if you as a leader aren't continuing to evolve, or you as a company aren't continuing to evolve, then even if you're conscious today, I would contend that 10, 20 years from now, you'll fall behind if you don't continue to evolve. And so that's why growth is so important to me. It's why I love to read. It's why I love to go to conferences like Conscious Capitalism or others, to continue to grow myself. And then the second piece that I mentioned is the love. And that's really all about not only bringing love into business, into the organization, which is becoming a little bit more accepted, especially in conscious capitalism circles. But it's not quite mainstream yet. It still makes some of the traditional folks a little bit uncomfortable. But that's mm-hmm. really about understanding just the interconnectedness of each one of us, of all our stakeholders, of, you know, ourselves with the planet, and really of all things. And so, you know, when I'm making any decision, if I'm not making it with that interconnectedness in mind, and with that love in mind, then I'm probably making a decision that's either, you know, short-sighted or self-interested. And so if I'm not learning, you know, that growth piece, and then I'm not loving and sharing what I know and teaching what I know and making my decisions in service of all these interconnected stakeholders and, you know, fellow humans, then I'm not really truly living my purpose. And so there's other pieces that are important to me. I know that generativity is important. You know, how are we passing this along to the next generation, growing the next generation of conscious leaders? How are we, you know, I always like to, I love that seventh generation principle I first learned about through conscious capitalism. I think it was the first conscious capitalism conference I went to where Native Americans have this seventh generation principle where every decision that you make should be with the idea that, you know, you're taking into account how it's going to affect your descendants seven generations hence. And that's really a piece that, gosh, how much would that change the business world if people made those kind of decisions rather than those short-term, you know, making the quarterly numbers type of decisions? That alone, I think, would change so much about business if we could develop the consciousness not only to understand the interconnections of ourselves with all of our stakeholders, but also the impact that we're going to have for many, many generations.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. And, you know, if you talk about love, one of the things that I believe with my engineering background is that, you know, I used to build computer networks. And in the computer network world, the information that's been passed or the energy that's been passed along those network lines, those phone lines, those satellite lines is data. But when I began to build my own business and begin to become a business consultant, I begin to build social networks of individuals and connecting individuals and bringing them into a community context. But what the energy that flows there is love, and get folks to understand the importance of the interconnectedness that we have with one another and how we have to rely on one another to thrive and grow in this world. So when you use love as one of your core principles, that's definitely something that I'm on board with and fully agree with, because I think, to your point, just a shift in thinking that you have when you put, are my thoughts and actions and decisions that I'm making, are they out of love or are they out of ego? And when you put that as your criteria, it does begin to change the decisions you're making. And which you just shared with me today about the seven generations, that to me is definitely profound in the context that that's something I'll definitely be incorporating into my thinking and my decision making as well. And I definitely would share that with others in my circle and throughout my networks, because you're right. If you begin to really think about the decisions that you make beyond yourself, which, you know, is the first element in conscious capitalism, the higher purpose, why I'm creating this company, why I'm putting myself through this endeavor and everything else. Now you're talking about doing it for seven generations beyond you after you pass. I truly look at that as the true higher purpose of being that conscious leader. So I definitely respect that and feel that and agree with you in that context. But I want to get a little more information about the XLR 18, and if you can talk a little bit about what's the XLR8, what does that stand for? That does stand for, is it an acronym? And what's the mission of the XLR18?
Yeah, so it doesn't stand for anything, but if you say it three times fast, then you'll get that it's accelerate. So we try to get companies where they want to go faster. So our mission really has always been in this spirit of conscious capitalism. You know, I think actually we sort of coined the term It's the very first Conscious Capitalism international conference that I was at. I think it was the third or fourth annual out in Boston in 2012, I believe. And we coined the term the unconscious conscious capitalist, you know, because there's so many other people that we met that felt like they had always lived by, you know, these principles and maybe didn't have the way to talk about it or the way to verbalize it, but they always believed in living this way, and they always believed in doing business this way. And so, you know, the Accelerate team from its founding has always been trying to help organizations become conscious businesses. And you know, I think that what we really specialize in is the evolving conscious leaders and helping them to create a more conscious culture where every individual in the company and all the stakeholders are thriving. And that's really always been, you know, starting with when we're working with a leader, is starting with how we can help them connect with and clarify and understand their own purpose and bring that more into their lives. And when they do that and the changes that we have when we work with clients on those sorts of things, it's remarkable. It never gets old to go to a retreat and take people through our inner compass process of purpose discovery and see the transformation that they make. And then as we're coaching them after that retreat week, you know, how we can help them really not only write that, you know, purpose statement, but really bring it into their lives and design their life around it. Sort of like you mentioned earlier, you know, how once you clarify that, the decisions that you make, the people that you surround yourself with, the environment that you create yourself changes. And so kind of the bread and butter of what we do is our evolutionary leadership process is usually at least a 15-month engagement with an individual leader where we will usually start off getting to know them a little bit with some more basic leadership style assessments, you know, how do you communicate and what's your motivational style and understanding that. And then what we do from there is go on a retreat in small groups, you know, anywhere from 6 to 12 usually leaders. And we have, during that time, we use some of the you know, just environment of a retreat to get them really connected with their purpose and going through that inner compass process. And during that week as well, we get them some feedback, you know, 360 feedback from all the people that they work with on how well they're living the values that they espouse and how, you know, truly conscious they are at this point in their lives. And then by the end of the week, we take that inner compass, so, you know, that summary of their purpose and their values and everything that's important to them, and combine that with the feedback that they get from all the people that they're working with on how they're doing as a leader. And we walk away from that week with really a plan for their development for the next year, year and a half at least. And so then we'll be meeting with them monthly and really taking them, coaching them through troubleshooting, you know, how do you actually actualize this purpose and how do you, you know, evolve yourself as a leader. And so that's really been what we do a lot with clients, and usually it'll start with, you know, the CEO or a couple of the executive team, and really when we get them engaged in the process, then very often in you know, the next class, they'll be so fired up about how they discovered their purpose and how much energy it brought them that they'll then want to, you know, send more of their executive team or filter it down further within the organization. And so we've done that with several clients, and what sometimes happens is a lot of people that are going through the process end up asking, well, gosh, I wish I could do this with more of my team. I wish I could have my spouse take this you know, inner compass process. I wish I could have my kids do it. They're, you know, feeling really, really lost in where they are in their lives right now, those sorts of things. And we're a relatively small company, and there's only so many hours in the day, so we've never been able to service all those requests, so to speak. But as you mentioned in my bio, I've been working for the last probably year or so on really turning that into an online course And actually, within the next month, we'll be launching the Accelerate You, we call it, Accelerate You Intercompass online course, where really it's that purpose discovery process. There will be the videos to explain how to go through it. There will be worksheets, that the same worksheets that we've used with, you know, hundreds of executives when we've done it in person, but now we'll be able to, when we do have that executive that says, gosh, I want to do this with my whole team, or that leader that says, gosh, I'd love to do this and really have a deeper connection with my spouse or my kids by having them do this and having us do it together. And, you know, we're talking again about creating that environment that we're surrounding ourselves with. You know, the more conscious leaders and purpose-driven leaders we can surround ourselves with, the better off we'll all be. And so that's been kind of one of the things that's really exciting, is how to take that to another level, to spread it out more, because we get such great feedback from it, and it's really something that I think for any conscious leader, however you're doing it, whether it's through our Intercompass process or there's plenty of different systems out there, but really connecting with your purpose and having a process to do it, because I think that so many people want to find their purpose and they put a lot of pressure on themselves to find their purpose, but it's a daunting task. And not only that, but once you do find it, it can be even more daunting to actually create that in your life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and I think it's a wonderful thing that your company, Accelerate, now I know how to properly say it instead of me reading it, you know, what you're doing to help folks, because you're absolutely right. Once you discover your purpose in life, now, you know, I liken that to seeing the Matrix, where Neo takes the blue pill and everything just changes. And it's now, the world is scary now because you're no longer naive. You now have an understanding of, you were put here on this earth to do something, and you've discovered what that is. Now, how you go about doing that and the manner in which you do that, you don't know that yet. And so that was becomes a scary and daunting challenge. And having professionals like yourself that can coach them and consult them and help them and take them through your system, I think is definitely necessary and needed. And so I applaud you all for your effort. And so on that line, can you share with our listening audience, what are some of the companies and clients that you all are working with or have worked with?
Yeah, so for the last 15 years, our biggest client, and it's grown over that time, is Wegmans Food Markets. And so they have been really well known for their culture for a long time. It's a family-run company. For all the listeners that are on the East Coast, especially in the Northeast, they've probably heard of Wegmans before. Elsewhere in the country, maybe not. But Wegmans has been, you know, on the Fortune Best Companies to Work For since it started, and about 5 or so years after we started working with them, they hit number one on the Best Companies to Work For. And so that's one that we're especially proud of. And basically, you know, when we started working with them, we created, you know, our evolutionary leadership process. We, you know, customized for them, but basically for the most part, what is our evolutionary leadership process is what they call Wegmans Leadership University. And so when you get to a certain level in the company, you basically, when you're going from mid to now becoming a senior level manager, you get tapped on the shoulder to come through our process. And so Wegmans is a company, you know, it takes a certain level of consciousness of a company to invest in their leaders to the extent that Wegmans does or other conscious businesses do. And so it's it's that long term investment, right? Like we're helping their leaders discover their purpose, and it's probably not going to show up in the bottom line, you know, next month, but we certainly believe, and they've kept us around, so they must believe it too, that over time the returns are, you know, phenomenal. And the culture that they've created, culture is really, you know, their secret sauce. They're well known for giving great service, but they've always put, their people first. and they've always really been really involved in how to, it's almost a cliche these days for leaders to say, well, our people are our most important asset. But very, very few leaders actually follow that up and invest in their people as if that was the case. But Bob Wegman, who started the company, or didn't start it, but really led it for most of its growth up until he passed away about 10 years ago now, was always interested in how can we take incredible care of our people, make them like they're part of the family. And certainly now Danny Wegman, his son, who's been leading it for a long time, and Danny's daughter, Colleen. So Danny, is the chairman and Colleen's the president. And so they're continuing with that ethos of really investing in their people and investing in a conscious business. And so it's nice to see that continue through the generations. But it's really interesting because in some ways, we don't do a good job of defining our target market, because we've got Wegmans, who is I think close to 50,000 employees now, and they're in retail. We have another client that's a smaller company in town that's about 150, and they're in manufacturing, Klein Steel, another company that locally at least is very well known for their culture. And so, it's a little bit, I like to think anyways, that it's a little bit that we don't define target market, because it's sort of universal. We work with architectural firms. We work with, retail companies. We work with manufacturing companies. And it's all because we're all people trying to work together, in companies. And no matter what that is, it's all about how we can connect people with their own purpose, how we can connect the company with its purpose. And so, in some ways, it becomes universal. And how do you do that? Well, we're all human beings. We're all working at these companies trying to find purpose in our lives and purpose in our work. And so that's kind of how we reach out to companies is more a matter of finding the kind of companies that want to invest in their people, want to invest in their culture, and that want to be those conscious businesses. And that's actually why we brought a conscious capitalism chapter to Rochester, is because we saw that Wegmans, they were in the original Firms of Endearment book, but there's a lot of other great companies in Rochester that are doing great work as well that might not be nationally known, but that we wanted to bring more of those companies together and more of those leaders together to create a learning community, a learning environment where they can continue to share best practices and hopefully win over some other companies in town that, might be interested and might want to learn about conscious capitalism but don't know how to get started. And so, similarly, I know that you're spreading the word down in the, D.C. area of how you can create those conscious businesses at the local level, because I think that there's a lot of power in that.
Yes, and you're absolutely right. I mean, Wegmans, being here in the D.C. area, Wegmans is one of my preferred stores that I patronize, look forward to going in. I like to say that when I go into, I choose to do business only with conscious stores as much as I possibly can. I would say at least in a given month, if I look over my receipts, I would say at least 90% have gone to companies that have a conscious culture and a conscious business model. And the things I love about going to Wegmans and even Whole Foods is that when you walk in those stores, I'm never in a hurry. I mean, usually when I go grocery shopping before I started shopping at Wegmans and Trader Joe's and Costco's, I was always in a hurry and want to get in, get out. It was not something I looked forward to at all. It was just something that had to be done. But now a company that has a culture that looks out for stakeholders, provides information on nutrition. I know that at the Wegmans store, I believe in Prince George's County, as you mentioned, Wegmans' daughter, she does yoga. She has yoga sessions that she does at the store to let folks who want to come in and take yoga lessons there you know, whether it's by video, I'm not sure. But the point of the matter is just the ideal of providing something else to the community, the stakeholders, beyond just, I just want to sell you products and get as much revenue as possible. I think is that, you know, I work as a conscious capitalist to help make conscious capitalism the norm as opposed to the exception. And, you know, so that any store we work, that we do patronize, and businesses that we do support, think about how better to engage their stakeholders and deliver a true stakeholder integration model. But one of the things you said earlier that I want to piggyback on, and you mentioned this with Wegmans, that it's a family-owned company. And I understand that Accelerate is one as well. So with that being said, how does it feel to be part of a family-owned company? And what is that environment like? What does that do for you as an individual to be able to work under your father and your mother's tutelage and learning and still have that love and support with that base? How does that lift you as a conscious leader and prepare you to deal with all the challenges that come along with running a business, and particularly a consulting firm of high-end CEOs?
Yeah, you know, it can definitely be a double-edged sword, and I think that we, you know, at Accelerate certainly have taken great advantage of some of the things that a family business can bring. You know, I think that when I talk about double-edged sword, you know, it can be great because I was talking earlier about that seventh generation principle, right? And so a family business, it's a little bit easier to be thinking about the long term. You know, thinking about, hey, I want to create this business, or I want to build this business so that I can pass it along to you know, the next generation. And so it becomes a little bit, you know, it invites you to make decisions more long term versus, oh, I'm owned by a bunch of stockholders and they want to see the quarterly numbers go up so that their you know, net worth goes up. And so that piece of it can be a really powerful influence on the company, influence on the leadership. And I think that's certainly held true for Wegmans. I think it certainly holds true for us. The thing that you have to watch out for is that with family businesses, you know, sometimes the next generation, it may or may not be aligned with their purpose to lead the business. And I know that my dad, especially, just being so focused on purpose and, you know, those conscious leadership pieces, was always very, very careful not to push me into, or, you know, guilt trip, or you know, any kind of coercion into taking over the family business or feeling like it was my obligation or anything like that, because I think that that's oftentimes where the family business can be a detriment. Is that especially if there's only you know, one child in the next generation to take it on, you know, figuring out whether or not that's truly part of your own purpose. You know, sometimes the next generation needs to go out and get some outside experience. In fact, I did that intentionally, even though that I knew that eventually I wanted to join the family business. I wanted to go get some outside experience and see what it was like elsewhere. And my dad was, you know, encouraging me to do that when I told him that was my decision, and wanted me to experience that. So I was, you know, out in the management training program at Wegmans for a couple years, and they were opening up new stores out in the Massachusetts area. And so I got kind of firsthand on the ground experience, getting my hands dirty of how do you recreate a culture, you know, in a brand new location in a brand new store when culture is their secret sauce. You know, they didn't have any stores within 5 hours of that first store we opened in Northborough, Massachusetts. And so you had to recreate that culture from scratch, basically. And so that was a really, you know, certainly helps me in my job today to have that experience. But just in general, to get a chance to look elsewhere and see what it's like. And then when you do come back, you're not, you know, wondering, well, what if I could have tried other things, or should I have gone and done something else with my life? And so I think that not necessarily that everybody has to go out and get some outside experience in that family business, but I'd certainly recommend it to most. And then just to be really conscious of whether or not this is something that is in alignment with the purpose of the next generation, and not pushing them into anything or making them feel like they should be obligated to take it on, because that then becomes really, I think, the reason that most family businesses don't last into the next generation, because there's all kinds of stats that very small percentages of them last into the third generation, and I think a lot of that is because if it creates that sense of obligation versus something that's truly passion aligned, then it's bound to fail. We're trying to create these companies that are purpose driven, and if somebody goes into it half heartedly, it's just not going to last.
Absolutely. As we talk about the conscious capitalism four principles of higher purpose, stakeholder integration, conscious leadership, and conscious culture, one of my favorite principles of that is the stakeholder integration. And with that being said, does Accelerate, and I'm sure you all have established a stakeholder integration plan or a process for identifying your key stakeholders and getting engaged with them?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that's been one of the fun things about getting more involved in the conscious capitalism movement, and also something that's been interesting as conscious capitalism evolves, and there are more companies, there are more processes, there are more best practices to be shared around how to do those sorts of things, because I think that when the stakeholder integration and all the principles were set, they were principles, but there wasn't a whole lot of meat around, okay, how do I actually create this in my company? And so it's been really exciting, we've been involved in conscious capitalism for about 5 years now, just to see how the movement has grown and how there are now more processes to develop and become more conscious. And so that's something that we've always been really focused on. As I mentioned, we've always been, not only our company itself tried to be a very conscious business, but we try to grow conscious businesses. And it was always in that unconscious, conscious capitalism way. We were doing it to the best of our ability from our experience, and now seeing what the organization as a whole has been able to create and what best practices can be shared, and just starting to professionalize some of those things. We're exploring right now becoming a B Corp. B Corps have been something that in conscious capitalism I'm really excited to see, because you could say that conscious capitalism, benefit corporations, B Corps, social entrepreneurship, all these different measurements, some might see them as in competition, but in the true spirit of conscious capitalism, one of my favorite stories is how John Mackey talks about how even your competitors should become your stakeholders. And so, I've been to a lot of the conscious capitalism conferences and learned a little bit more about B Corps. And so that was one way, when you're talking about a stakeholder integration model, they provide more structure around, we've always wanted to engage stakeholders. We've always talked about it. We've always talked with them and tried to build long-term partnerships with our stakeholders. But now we have more formalized tools to do that. We have more processes to be able to do that more effectively and to be able to continue that at the top.
Absolutely. Well, we're getting to the top of the hour. We have about 5 minutes left in the show, and I have two key questions I want to ask you, and give you enough time to ask these questions, because I think this is important information to share with our listening audience. Talk about you again as a conscious leader. I understand you to be a founder of Rock City Coalition, which is a group of millennials. Can you talk a little about what Rock City is and what is the vision 2025?
Absolutely, yeah. So there's actually over 50 young professional groups around Rochester. Some are with nonprofits. There's the United Way Young Leaders Club. There's a Habitat for Humanity Young Professionals. Gildas Club has a Young Professional Board. There's some that are based on different interests. There's some that are affinity groups. So there's all these different young professional organizations around town. And so the Rock City Coalition was actually formed about 10 years ago, and it was intended to be the umbrella organization for all these young professional groups. So to really bring them all together, to advocate for young professionals, to advocate for, you know, helping young professionals take on leadership roles in the community. And we actually kicked off about a year ago, maybe about a year and a half now, a Vision 2025 project. And that was all about how can we create a shared vision of Rochester's future among all the young professional groups. Because like I mentioned, there are so many different ones. There's certainly within that a lot of different pockets of diversity, not only, you know, ethnic and racial diversity, but diversity of different industries and experience levels and all different sorts of things that these leaders are interested in. And how do we create a shared vision of Rochester's future when so much, as I mentioned at the very beginning, so much of Rochester's future is really being written today. So there's exciting developments going on. It's like many that are in the so-called, I hate the term, but the so-called Rust Belt that really went through some struggles. There was actually a time where 60% of Rochester's workforce was Kodak, Xerox, and Bausch & Lomb. They were the big three. And now it's down under 6% because all those companies have either struggled or moved elsewhere. And so Rochester has really been in a period of reinvention. And so much of Rochester's history is being written right now. And so my goal with the Vision 2025 project is to engage millennials in not only creating a shared vision of that future that we want to live in 2025, but also how can we become the co-authors of that future of Rochester? Because by 2025, many of us will be, taking on leadership roles in the community. We might not even be young professionals anymore because over that 10-year period, but because that future is being written right now, engaging them in that process. For example, the Rochester City School District is struggling mightily and has for a number of years. And if we as a young professional community don't try to surround and support and uplift and do what we can to help that city school district, then the future of Rochester is not going to be so bright. And the future, those are the future young professionals of Rochester. So really just getting engaged in the community, and that's always been my goal, is how to get millennials, how to get young professionals engaged in finding their purpose and figuring out how to have an impact in the community that is aligned with their purpose.
Absolutely, absolutely. And unfortunately, we have about roughly a minute and 30 seconds left on the show, and I want to give you an opportunity to share contact information that you have for Accelerate, and any other information that you want to share with our listening audience.
Great, yeah, thank you. So you can learn a little bit more about the Accelerate team at the XLR, the number 8, team.com. You can also learn more about our Conscious Capitalism Rochester chapter at consciouscapitalismroc.org. And as I mentioned, we've got that Inner Compass online course that's going to be coming in the next month or so. So that's actually accelerateyou.com. So XLR, the number 8, youyou.com. So you can stay in touch, and certainly on the website you can find contact information for me. Always happy to talk to fellow conscious capitalists. And King, I really appreciate your time and appreciate you giving me the forum and having this, and I'm going to become a regular listener. I've heard a couple now, and I'm excited to continue to learn from more conscious capitalists around the country and around the world. So thank you very much.
And thank you, Andrew, for being on the show. You are the reason why the show is created. I want to be able to expose more conscious leaders and conscious capitalists to the world. And I want to thank our listening audience for listening today to the Conscious Capitalist Show. Until next week, live your higher purpose, focus on your stakeholders, And let's all create the conscious culture that we want to live. Thank you.